Choke points.
Let's go.
Brought to you by Acton's Quality Roofing.
Let's go.
We warned you this was coming earlier this year, so you have no excuse not to be prepared. The I-90 construction between North Bend and Ellensburg is back. That means lanes will be closed and delays will be long. Chris.
The orange cones are going up in several spots along that 80-mile stretch of I-90. The Washington Department of Transportation is working on multiple improvement projects along the corridor all at the same time. WashDOT Assistant Region Administrator Brian White says that the work includes widening the freeway through Easton, replacing concrete panels, and fixing bridge decks.
We're going to be doing about 12 bridge deck repairs. And so these jobs are designed to kind of fix the potholes that are in the decks so we have a better driving surface. And then ultimately we'll come back with a deck overlay where we pour concrete across the whole bridge.
All of those bridge projects are expected to start taking lanes sometime this month. The lane closures could be at night. They could be during the day. So if you're driving between North Bend and Ellensburg, you can expect multiple construction zones on your trip. But White says they try to keep the delays to a minimum on the weekends.
Even if we have both lanes open, if they're shifted or there's a car broke down on the side of the road, it just takes a few minutes and traffic starts backing up. But, you know, our goal is always to keep people moving on the weekends.
Now, the biggest upcoming change for drivers will come around Easton. If you've driven up or down the Easton Hill recently in either direction of I-90, you've seen all the work in the median and the barriers going up over the last year or so. This is where the state is actually adding a lane in each direction of I-90. This is the widening project. But to do all that, westbound traffic will have to be detoured into the eastbound lanes on the Easton Hill. White says this was the best way to keep traffic flowing and keep workers safe.
So we're hoping that's going to speed things along for the traveling public and then keep workers safe as you don't have speeding traffic right next to them.
This configuration is going to be in place for several years as the new eastbound lanes are built. Rock blasting is going to return to the corridor next year. So we'll work on the Vantage Bridge east of Ellensburg. This time it's a big project on that bridge. That's going to cause huge delays across the Columbia River, but that's next year. We can wait to talk about the specifics on that. White says this work just needs to get done and drivers need to plan ahead.
I-90 served us well over the years, but it's time that she needed some rehabilitation. It's got more vehicles, more trucks, and the road's only designed to last so long, and that time is now to start working on it.
My best advice is to go very early or to go very late when traveling through this area to avoid the heaviest of the backups, especially on that Sunday get-back day when we already know how bad it can be from Clee Ellum through Easton and up to Snoqualmie Pass. Watch your speeds in those construction zones, not only to keep the workers safe, but to prevent any accidents that could make the delays even worse. And, of course, my weekly drives to Montana begin in less than a month, so I will be able to give you firsthand updates on exactly what the drive is like, how the delays are going, and how the construction is progressing.
You are probably intimately familiar with I-90 in a way that most of us can only dream of.
Well, that or truck drivers. A lot of the truck drivers that listen to the show, I know long haul that. It's getting to know every point, every milepost, every cow, every wheat field. Yeah.
But the cows have their own bridges now.
Well, they do, but I mean, they don't use the wildlife crossings. Oh. They're in their own. I mean, I've got names for them all. I'm sure they know our car by, if they could see it, because it is generally moving at a pretty good rate.
Yes, I'm sure it is. What's the West Seattle Bridge update? Isn't that about to be reopened?
I'm going to be meeting with Heather Marks with the Department of Transportation Seattle a little bit later on today, and I'm expecting to get an actual date for when the bridge is going to reopen. It was scheduled earlier this year to open the week of September 12th, and so we're going to get hopefully an update of a date certain for when the West Seattle Bridge will reopen. If you think about it, if it opens that week of September 12th, it'll be more than 900 days since that bridge has opened, since the closure in late March of 2020. I can't believe it's been out that long.
And it's going to last for another how many years?
Hopefully 40.
40?
They strung, 46 miles of steel cable inside that thing to just tighten up the concrete spans there to hopefully keep it from doing it. So we'll see.
It's basically just a giant concrete fiddle, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much, because those center spans are hollow. You forget they're hollow, yeah. And that's where all that steel, they put it in. And, I mean, they basically just tighten that baby up, and plus all the concrete work, the epoxy, the overlay, a bunch of stuff. So, yeah, hopefully we'll get that word later today and get it out as soon as we hear it.
Chris Sullivan. And Hannah Scott is here to bring us up to date on a couple of developments. One of them is that rate hikes are on the way for Seattle City Light customers, and the city is going to try to lure more film and TV productions back to Seattle. Let's go to Chiron News Radio's Hannah Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Dave. Yes, we'll start with the effort to lure film and TV productions back to the city of Seattle. You remember over the last couple of years, this was a big issue at the state level in the legislature, which eventually has decided to increase its spending in those very same efforts from, I think, what was $3 million a year to $12 million investment in the hopes of bringing such business back, you know, having people film here, basically, because it's going other places, which is what Seattle City Council member Sarah Nelson pointed out as she was proposing the creation of a film commission. Part of the reason?
Seattle's got a reputation as a creative city. And Seattle's also been on the cutting edge of filmmaking. However, our creatives are being priced out of town, and we're no longer on the cutting edge. It's bad enough to see Vancouver in movies and films that are supposed to be about Seattle. And it's even worse to see our creatives in small businesses moving to other cities with more film opportunities, like Portland, for example, or Nashville or Atlanta.
Nelson also pointed out.
So if we want to grow our creative economy, focusing on film is the best bet we can make. Because film is the most commercially viable art form in which artists can make a living making their art in the most most diverse and greatest number of creative disciplines. Almost 200 creative jobs that are activated on a single film production. And these are typically living wage union jobs, and many don't need a college degree.
So I do want to point out that there, as there was when this was brought up at the state level, as far as putting any incentives out there to bring filming back to the state, there are think tanks and tax incentive experts who say, actually, you know, when you put these incentives out, you tend to lose money because, for instance, I think there's an example in Michigan where they give like a 40% tax break to bring the film productions to their state. And then by the time all is said and done, it's kind of a wash. They don't really bring any additional revenue. And as far as job creation, they tend to be the transplants, right? They're here right. for the filming, but they're not locals.
You get publicity right. for the city when the film comes out, though, right?
Right, exactly. So I think that's one of the things that those think tanks and those experts don't hit on, and I think that there's definitely a big appetite for that. So anyway, this proposal from Councilmember Nelson is for the creation of the Seattle Film Commission. This would be 11 members, 5 appointed by the mayor, 5 appointed by the council, 1 appointed by the commission itself, that would look at ways to really proactively get filming back to the city. And a vote on this at the committee level, I believe, is expected September 14th, if I'm not mistaken. So we'll see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And your rate hikes. Seattle City, you know, as with all utilities, when the pandemic came, you know, we had the moratorium on any shutoffs and anything like that. And really no rate hikes for 2020. I think Seattle City Light had a maybe 2% rate hike that was implemented last year. But now things are tough. So we're going to be seeing possibly some significant rate hikes for Seattle Public Utilities and Seattle City Light. They proposed yesterday for 2023 and 2024 what amounts to a combined nearly 10% rate hike. So the average of 4.5% each year for customers. So you're looking at $4, $5 extra each bill. So I'm sorry, I misspoke. $10 combined, not 10%, is the average increase that you'll see there. Seattle City Light CFO, Chief Financial Officer Christy Granger, explained yesterday.
What is driving up City Light's rates? And the short answer is it's inflation. We are seeing rising costs in raw materials, The price of steel, aluminum, copper, which is, of course, a part of electric wire, has gone up 70 to 80% since 2020. Similarly, underground cable, conduit, poles, transformers, we're seeing rising costs in all of these materials that, that City Light uses to deliver electric service. The rate increases that are in this ordinance reflect inflation that we are seeing today and that we have been seeing in 2021 as well. And so in some ways, we're catching up for price increases that are happening as we speak.
So this, again, will have to be approved by the council, which had a lot of questions. This ordinance that they were proposing that includes these rate increases is like 60 pages. It includes a variety of things. And I want to point out this comes as they are dealing with an enormous amount of customer debt. So to give you an example, before the pandemic, they had Seattle City Light had customer debt that was totaling, let's say, $17 million. As of July 31st of this year, 43,000 customers owe roughly $49 million in debt.
These just people who just can't afford to pay their bill?
Can't afford to pay their bill. Yeah, absolutely. Times are tough, right? Yeah. Times were tough before the pandemic, but now you've got inflation. The housing issues and rent issues haven't gotten any better. We lost the eviction moratorium. We lost all of the things. So Seattle City Light still has not shut anybody off. They're making payment arrangements with everybody, but they need to.
Well, now, if you don't shut people off, what's the motivation to pay the bill?
Well, they will eventually have to get there, obviously. Right now, what they're trying to do is make these payment arrangements, but they have, I believe, some harshly worded letters going out to folks who have neglected to make those payment arrangements coming out next month because it's time. It's time.
Yeah.
Basically.
All right. What about the mayor?
The mayor, I just want to hit really quickly. We have an update on the effort for police retention. His goal, of course, was to get 1,500 police officers total over the next 5 years. He was on with G and Ursula yesterday. G asked him, what's the status of that?
What I am pleased about is the council did pass 4-1 yesterday my police recruitment plan, and I anticipate it will get passed by the full council in that I only need one more vote. So I'm going to look at the work that they are doing that's aligned with what I'm trying to do. I think we do have to acknowledge that in the last couple of years, the police department were demoralized. Many elected leaders sort of jumped on the bandwagon to criticize but also not motivate. Very seductive to do. So I'm not going to point fingers at the council. Even though we're out of politics, I could have done more to motivate and talk about the great work that we need and how this is a unifying element. So right. I'm going to move forward. I'll let other people criticize whoever they want to criticize. I'm moving forward. I hopefully get my recruitment and retention plan passed by five votes, and we're going to build this department up to where we need it to be.
So he's feeling confident. The question specifically was, it basically framed it as though there were still the council's makeup currently was the same as it was that when they were demoralizing the police and things like that. There's been a bit of a changing of the guard there. There is more support on the council now for the police department and apparently for the mayor's retention plan.
Is the bonus plan going to go ahead?
Well, that's what we'll see. That's part of his retention plan is that bonuses and incentive.
There's still members of the council who do not want to see more cops added?
I don't think that you hear that as openly as you did. Certainly, Shama Sawant would say no, absolutely not. I think Tamara Morales falls into that category as well. Mm-hmm. But he just needs the five votes, and so far he had that. So he's looking for one more vote to get it through the full council. So we'll have to wait and see. That's coming up here in a couple of weeks.
Cairo News Radio's Hannah Scott. Thank you, Hannah.
Be back.
Time for your daily dose of kindness now. It is sponsored by Heritage Homecraft. It's always nice to mark a work anniversary, even though Dave won't let me celebrate his. 44 years, right? Every time I say, is it your work anniversary? You go, yeah, but you don't have to say anything.
But that's January.
But get this. This guy has been doing the same job for 70 years.
No.
KOCO News in Oklahoma has the story.
Thanks so much for this recognition because, it's just, like I say, it's just something that I do because I enjoy doing it.
Johnny Bell is a humble man of few words. So when he speaks, everyone listens.
And he just loves everyone, and he has a way of just being magic and just drawing everyone together to where they just all felt like family.
And as humble as he is, what he just accomplished is something to certainly brag about. Johnny has been showing up for his job at the post office in OKC day in and day out for 70 years. Johnny was just 23 years old when he started working for the Postal Service. The pay back then, $1.81 an hour. That dedication means that Johnny currently is the longest tenured post office employee in the country.
Thank you for coming.
Friday was all about honoring that dedicated service. When it comes to dedicated service and just being an overall good human being, after 70 years, it's safe to say Johnny Bell always delivers.
Driving, if there were more Johnny Bells around, then the Postal Service would be a better place. The world would be at a better place because that's just who he is.
And I'll have what he's having because he looks great for 93.
93 years old?
I know.
Wow. And working at the post office.
Yeah.
Not an easy job.
No.
7:49, and now from the Gian Ursula Show, which starts at 9 o'clock here on Cairo News Radio. Here's G. Scott, and we played this earlier, G. This is Beto O'Rourke running for governor of Texas. He was talking about the Uvalde shooting and the weapons used.
And take that weapon that was originally designed for use on the battlefields in Vietnam to penetrate an enemy soldier's helmet at 500 feet and knock him down dead up against kids at 5 feet. It may be funny to you, motherfucker, but it's not funny to me.
Somebody in the crowd apparently laughed, and so he shut them down using intemperate language. So where do you come down on the use of bad language by politicians in public settings like that?
Last night, I just wanted real quick. Last night, I was pumped up when I saw it, and I was screaming just like this crowd was. And then reality sets in, and I can't be okay with that. I mean, it was good for the moment, but no, I don't want to see that be what makes people get rallied and people rally behind that. You know, I know it's been said, it's continued to be said that there's one party in particular. They just flat out they're like bullies. Right. And it seems like that if you're nice and you're trying to still get your point across, for some reason, it doesn't seem like it works, because the ultimate bully pled the fifth 440 times yesterday. And for some reason, it's just hard to penetrate bullies without just sometimes you're at school. You just got to smack them back. But Colleen, in this case, I think you can't do that.
Ah, yeah, I agree. I don't want to see it turn to that's normal. However, in this case, I feel like it was appropriate for that person to laugh like they did when he was describing the weapon and how it was used against children. I think it's appropriate. I think sometimes you have to shock and awe to get somebody out of that bully status and into a corner. I don't believe in shame either. I think shame is the least effective way to get somebody to change their mind and or find compromise with you. But this, to me, was the purest expression of the rage that I feel when I hear people either defending or protecting the guns that have been used to kill children. And it just happened yesterday when Dave and I were talking to a gun lobbyist, and I lost my cool. I didn't swear, but I definitely lost my cool when he appeared to be defending the shooter by saying, well, he purchased it legally. And it was like, no, you don't get to say that when children are dying. And, you know, we got into it. You'll probably hear it later on Seattle's Morning News at some point. But I think it's necessary in times like this when you're fighting for the lives of children.
Yeah.
Use any word you want.
That's the thing about legal. Like, everybody's like, oh, that's legal. That's legal. But being legal doesn't mean it's justice.
Right.
For an example. So there's, yeah. What do you mean by that? Slavery was legal. Jim Crow was legal. Apartheid was legal. Don't you guys want me to keep going with
this? Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, this whole, it was legal. And so back to what you're saying, you can pick the topic. You have individuals that choose politics over human decency.
Yeah.
And the crazy part is the amount of people in this country, the Tucker Carlsons of the world, that make so much money to rile folks up. Get them all riled up, and then they just go back to collecting their coins and their pennies, and ha ha ha.
Well, the
and
question
they come back
here
the next day.
How do you handle a situation like that where somebody laughs at something that you shouldn't laugh at? And I think I would probably say, hang on a second, sir, what do you find funny about that?
But then you give them a platform to keep speaking their nonsense.
Agree, Colleen. You do what Obama would do. And it's crazy, boy. I know when we go down in history, let's be real. Obama is 10 times, 100 times the man that Donald Trump will ever be. And it feels good to say it.
Yeah. Because he rises above, because he turns the other cheek. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. The same guy who built their career in the first place off of a birth certificate that was a lie in the beginning. So, yeah, you got to do what Obama does. But by the way, that bothers people that Obama's better. Good morning, guys.
Yeah, thanks, G. G and Ursula at 9 o'clock on Cairo News Radio.
He loves to light up our text line, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. It's the lights flicker in the station. Yeah.
Getting them warmed up for the G and Ursula show at 9.
Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien and Chris Sullivan. Let's go to Washington, D.C. and CBS News correspondent Scott McFarlane, who covers every step of the court cases for people arrested over the attack on the Capitol and basically covers everything else in Washington. So let's talk about the Mar-a-Lago search first, Scott. After that search, Donald Trump went to New York for another deposition in a different investigation. This is the New York investigation into his business practices. Took the Fifth a couple of times. Says he has now changed his mind on the Fifth Amendment. But will there be any consequences to his decision? And is this the last of his depositions, or is he going to be called back in that case?
Well, it's likely the last of his depositions in that case. But, Dave, you've got to reorient yourself when you're trying to talk about former President Trump and talk about investigations, because there are many different investigations that have a nexus to Donald Trump. There's that New York civil investigation into his businesses, for which he was deposed and invoked his Fifth Amendment rights more than 400 times. There's the Georgia investigation, which is moving very quickly, an investigation into the efforts to overturn the Georgia presidential election in 2020. That has a nexus to former President Trump. Then there's everything happening in Washington and Mar-a-Lago. In Mar-a-Lago, about the National Archives records he's believed to have kept instead of returned properly, and all the January 6th and election and false elector investigations underway here in Washington, which have some nexus to Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. In the Atlanta, the Fulton County investigation down there, could he be subpoenaed to testify in that?
If he's subpoenaed, we'll know about it. And that's the interesting thing about the Georgia election. Investigation. It's a state investigation. Unlike the feds, if a state investigation wants to subpoena somebody from out of state, they have to make a public court record of it. So that's how we knew Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina, had been requested, and Rudy Giuliani, because they had to make a public paper trail. The feds don't have to do that. They just want to subpoena somebody. They send it over.
Well, now, I've heard that Lindsey Graham's, but what does Lindsey Graham have to contribute to this?
Lindsey Graham also called Georgia election officials between Election Day and the inauguration of President Biden. So he's being investigated, presumably, for interference or alleged interference with the proper counting and certification of the election.
Lindsey did, huh? Now, is there a tape of that call?
As far as we know, there's no audio of that call, but the audio of Donald Trump's call to the Georgia state election officials really are the reason why so many of us are focused on the Georgia prosecution, because that's a particularly unique piece of evidence.
Yes, it is. He's not going to be able to take the Fifth in that investigation, is he?
Maybe less effective if he tries.
Yeah. On the Mar-a-Lago search, I saw reports this morning that it might have been based on an insider tip. Because one of the questions is apparently they've been there before. They know what's stored there. So why would they decide all of a sudden that they had to check again? And the answer was this tip. You know anything about that?
There are two things we can say for certain. First of all, there's now a deadline I want you to focus on. Monday, 2 p.m. Pacific time. That's the court deadline in Florida for the Justice Department to explain why the search warrant should remain sealed. A number of media organizations, including the New York Times, have sued in federal court to get that thing unsealed so the public can see it. The Justice Department has to file a public court motion 2 p.m. Monday explaining why it should or shouldn't be. That will be their first, I guess, open public document statement about this search and this search warrant. We may learn something once that happens. And of course, that's the deadline. The Justice Department could file that paperwork anytime between now and then. So our radar is up. We also know that this search of Mar-a-Lago came 6 months almost to the day after the National Archives asked the Justice Department to get involved about these records. They requested it February 10th, 2022, that these records might be missing. They're supposed to be in the possession of the archives in Maryland, and that the Justice Department should investigate. We may have just seen the tip of the spear of that investigation with the search.
Okay, so then the working theory is that this search was instigated by the National Archives. Because I know there are people who think that this is just sort of a way for the January 6th committee to get a hold of stuff.
Well, the absence of information from the Justice Department, the void is going to be filled. It's going to be filled with conspiracy theories. It's going to be filled with conjecture. It's going to be filled, rightly or wrongly, with guesstimates as to what they're after. This is the protocol. This is not just a, I shouldn't say protocol. This is a hard and fast rule of the Justice Department. They don't confirm or deny investigations while they're open. Mm-hmm. They keep search warrants sealed if they can in the courts while they're being executed, and they will only speak through their court filings. That means unless or until they file a case. But this isn't your normal case, if there is one. Right. This is different. I'm not sure it's going to be tenable, Dave, for the Justice Department to keep saying no comment when they do something so provocative as search the home of a former president.
Right, and a lot of people feel the same way. Okay, you've talked to John Bolton, who is one of Trump's former national security advisors, about this plot to assassinate him, which was going to be carried out by Iranian agents. How would they have done this?
Well, they had somebody with the Federal Justice Department calls a confidential human source in the United States who was doing communication, the feds say, with this Iranian figure who was trying to solicit a hitman to kill former National Security Advisor, Trump National Security Advisor, John Bolton. He spoke with John Bolton about this. And he says he was warned. He was given his Secret Service protection back, even though he was out of office, because this was real. And I asked him, "How this doesn't seem tenable, and somebody in Iran, more than 10,000 miles away, can knows your movements and can secure the services or attempt to of a U.S. figure to kill you." And he says the Iranian intelligence is just that. It's intelligence. They can gather information. They can spy. They can figure things out. And he is making the argument that that indicates it's a state actor and should have diplomatic impacts on the U.S. and Iran because of it, and that they should blow up this nuclear deal they were talking about reinstituting because of what Iran has, you know, attempted to do to him.
Of course, when you think about it, we do it. I mean, we kill one of their military commanders by remote control, and we sort of assume, well, we can do that because nobody else has that capability. They couldn't possibly do it here. But what this tells me is they're trying.
Well, you can read it either way, too, Dave. You know, they have the capability of getting some intel on John Bolton's movements, but they didn't have the capability of executing the plan. So they may not be able to match the U.S. capability or might with overseas surveillance or intelligence, but they certainly do try. And, yeah, I think that it underscores something. There's international threats to the safety of our leaders. But at this moment, especially in the wake of the Mar-a-Lago search, there is a domestic threat of violence against our government leaders.
Yeah.
I heard in court yesterday, federal judge handling a January 6th case told the courtroom, just so you all know, all of us judges handling these cases, we're getting vile, vulgar death threats. And that's a group of judges handling cases, a politically charged case, the defendants of whom are unknown. Imagine if there's a high-profile defendant eventually.
Yeah. Scott McFarland, CBS News Washington, D.C. correspondent. Scott, thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News, the podcast. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. You can find our podcast weekday mornings right at 9:30.
And if you subscribe, you'll never miss the Daily Dose of Kindness.